We need a tally board.
Can I call the House Rural Communities Land Use and Water Committee to order? This is the 3rd of February. It is promptly 8 a.m. And actually, more like 7:58. I just like to start a little early this morning. And let's get going. House Bill 4113 is now open for a public hearing, and I will call Raquel Ransier, Tom Byler, and Lori Onan, and three of you, please. Three chairs, three people. That's perfect. Good morning. Glad the record reflects we didn't make you wait 17 minutes while we were getting our act together. But sorry for that.
Well, good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Very happy to be here this morning. For the record, Lori Onan, Natural Resources Policy Advisor with the Office of Governor Kate Brown. And Director Byler and Raquel are here with me today to talk about our support for House Bill 4113. And I will just have a couple opening comments before turning it over to Tom and Raquel. We were last before you, November 16 last year, to provide a drought update for the 2015 drought. And today what we're going to cover is drought conditions, what we're doing to become more resilient to drought in the future, how we respond during a drought emergency, and what is proposed in House Bill 4113. And we have a brief presentation on those. And I'm just going to remind folks about the drought in 2015. There's a number of bullets on this slide. I'm not going to cover them all. But basically, the drought broke records for low snowpack, low stream flows in some parts of the state, and more than two-thirds of Oregon was in extreme drought. And it had widespread impacts. We are connected to and rely on water for Oregon's bountiful agriculture, for our fish and wildlife, for recreation, for economic development, and for healthy communities that need water to thrive. So the 2015 drought was a warning shot that we need to be more prepared. Oregon's water future and resiliency to drought are priorities for Governor Brown. We need to plan and act now to build resiliency for drought for the short term and for the longer term. So I want to thank this committee and the legislature for your leadership, including funding in 2015 for the water package. I want to thank the sponsors of House Bill 4113 and just say by working together, we will build a more resilient Oregon water future. So thank you, and I'll turn it over to Tom.
Well, thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tom Byler. I'm the director at the Oregon Water Resources Department and appreciate the opportunity to be here today to testify on in support of House Bill 4113. Lori just showed you a slide of Oregon in the throes of drought in August, and you know, those red and orange colors are not good. That's when the conditions are bad, and the conditions that in that slide indicate this was a statewide issue, which frankly is pretty rare to see these kinds of conditions impact Western Oregon and the coast, but they did last year, and they were significant. Moving forward to the next slide, I just want to point out a little bit where we are today and gaze into the crystal ball a little bit to see what the future might hold for us, to provide some context around the year that we're having so far, some of the questions that come into mind as we prepare for the water year and dive into the water year this year, and kind of frame for you some context around the different tools and resources that we have available to communities around the state to help them address their water needs. So as you can see with this current slide, the big red blotch covering most of the state has receded quite a bit by January of this year as a result of some of the good weather that we've seen, especially in December. But my main point here is that conditions still are dry in most parts of the state. It takes time to reverse some of the difficult dry conditions and drought conditions and severe continuing drought conditions that we've seen in many parts of the state. So wanted to emphasize that we're still not back where we'd want to be. And if you could move to the next slide, please. Despite the really good year that we're having so far, as you can see in this slide, any colors of blue or green are very good in my book. After spending the past year looking at a bunch of red and orange colors that which signify drought, I can't tell you how soothing it is to me to see these blue and green colors showing that in this case we've got great snowpack well above at or above normal in this around the state. That's good news. It is on the heels of what we saw as a very good December. And so we're thrilled to be in a better position, a much better position for the water year this year compared to where we were at this time last year. That, you know, but again, we're still, it's still early and we can't declare victory. We can't declare that we don't know exactly how things are going to roll out for us. And I'll talk about that in just a minute. But just to give you another example of the deficit that we are trying to fill here that was created by multiple years of drought. This slide here shows reservoir capacity and storage in a number of states in the West. And Oregon is third to the right. And at the top, you'll see numbers. These represent the amount of acre feet storage that collectively combined within these states. And for Oregon, there's a little under 3.2 million acre feet of storage that's that is indicated in this federal chart here. The and then on the left-hand side, you'll see the percent of usable contents. That is how gives you a range of how much water within those reservoirs is usable. And the black line on each of these bars shows kind of the average percent of usable contents in the reservoirs collectively. And you'll note in Oregon, the average usable contents in our collective storage for the state is at about 45%. And currently, and that's the red line that you'll see, we're at about 28%. Now, that's a complicated way of saying that our reservoirs aren't full and it's going to take some time to recharge them. The snowpack and the precipitation that we've received so far bode well, but it's no guarantee that, and especially on some of the east side reservoirs, that even with this really strong snowpack, that we'll see a full refilling of some of these reservoirs around the state. So we go to the next slide, please. So let's
hey, Tom,
yes.
While you're on that slide, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for my curiosity, and I'm sorry I was called out for a moment and I missed the previous slide, so maybe you answered this, but as of right now with the snow and the rain that we have had, just maybe a quick synopsis of what are the best parts of the state right now that maybe for this year, and what are the worst parts of the state right now for the rest of the year?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative Post, absolutely. So the slide that we have up right now shows the current conditions from a drought analysis standpoint. So this, they're looking at soil moisture content. They're looking at a variety of conditions. And as you know, we're improving is the bottom line. But still, three-quarters of the state is in moderate to severe drought. And so if we can go move the next slide, though. And so here's the overlay. This is the snowpack numbers as of the, I believe, the end of January around the state. And this is as a percent of normal. And so, as you can see, nearly everywhere we're either at normal, near normal, or well above normal. That's good. That's very good news. But we still have a number of months ahead of us, and which may lead me to, unless you have any additional questions around that.
No, must have been what I missed.
Yeah.
Okay, so the darker the better, obviously, because I can't read that far side.
Yes.
The darker the better. So in the mid-valley, that's actually the worst right now? Really? Okay.
But you might, in the mid-valley, in the Willamette Valley, less snow-dependent, and you typically receive a lot more rain than these other areas.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Representative Gomberg.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't want to disrupt the presentation here, but I just wanted to draw some attention to the white area here, the coastline. And we're not experiencing snowpack, and we're not filling our reservoirs, but we've got plenty of water. I mean, what happens on the coast is when you don't have snow, you have rain. And we're getting more than our share of water out there. Ironically, the drought is having an effect on us that results in flooding and landslides and sinkholes and road closures. It's a different aspect of the drought entirely, but it's all still drought-related.
Mr. Chair, if we could go to the – I want to make one more comment on this slide. This represents a number of different states and the reservoirs that they have. And you'll note that there are two states in blue that are doing well in terms of their capacity, and the others are not, or they don't have information like California. The ones that are in red are really the states in the West Coast and the Southwest that really got hammered hard in recent years around drought. So I just wanted to give a little context around this slide that I hadn't mentioned earlier. So let's for a moment gaze into the crystal ball. Now, this is the National Weather Service information, and I'd like to direct your attention to the top left-hand corner. This is a three-month outlook, February, March, and April, around temperature. And if you, as you look at the map of the United States, if you see colors ranging from yellow to red, they're predicting above normal temperatures in that region of the country. The white area is an equal chance of being above or below normal in terms of temperature. And the bluish colors are predicted to be below normal temperature. Just below that, you'll see a map that that shows predictions for the next 3 months around precipitation. And the brown colors are predicting below normal precipitation. The white, again, is equal chance of being above or below. And then the green colors are expecting above normal precipitation. And so you'll see on the temperature item at the top left, we're predicted to have above normal temperatures throughout the state. Below precipitation in the northern third, I guess, of the state. These are predictions, believe me. We were looking at these a month or two ago, and I would have told you then that we were expecting dry, warm conditions, and we didn't receive that in December like we expected or like as predicted. So, this is not an exact science. Taking those the temperature and the precip predictions into account and then looking at the outlook on the right-hand side, you'll see in the western part of the United States a series of different colors on the map. If you see the dark brown, they're predicting that drought will persist going into this year, which includes a big chunk of eastern Oregon, parts of southeastern Washington, parts of Idaho and Montana. You'll see that in southern Oregon and southeast Oregon, they're predicting that drought will remain but improve. And we'll see a little bit of improvement in southwest Oregon in terms of drought removal being likely. This is a bit of crystal ball, but it does give one a bit of a flavor of what may lie ahead. Now, I want to just connect the dots back to the map where we saw all those blue tones and great snowpack. The next few months are going to be important for us, and we are going to be monitoring those very closely. If we do see things dry up, and if we do see temperatures rise significantly, we're going to see those snowpacks start to melt off earlier than we would expect, and that will have an impact on communities around the state. The good news, though, I think at this point is that, again, we're in a much better place today than we were a year ago in terms of snowpack, and I think that will help. But we will be watching closely, and we will be talking with our counterparts who track these this type of information to consult on what lies ahead. So. The question that we grapple with on a daily basis, the Water Resources Department, that we've been working on with our stakeholders, the governor's office, the legislature, and many others, is do we have the right kinds of tools available to address people's needs when there's not enough water to meet a variety of needs? And this slide is intended to give you a sense of kind of the different approach that we are thinking about in terms of how we can meet and provide the services that the public needs. At the top left, you see immediate, how do we address immediate needs? And the idea here is, are we putting into place, do we provide services or tools for communities that are in the throes of bad conditions, where a drought emergency is declared and there's not enough water to go around? We do have some tools on the books. Raquel will talk about this a little bit as she walks you through the proposal in the bill that's before you. But it's really, you know, looking at how do we deal with the immediate situation. In terms of intermediate, we look at that as making sure that we have action plans and that people are putting some forethought into how they react to more immediate situations. And this can be exemplified through the work that we do with cities and community water providers around the state in terms of helping them develop water management plans that have some contingencies to deal with emergency situations such as drought. And then last but not least, you know, do we have the kinds of tools available to deal with long-term supply needs? Are we working towards sustainable water future for communities around the state? And I want to spend a little bit of time amplifying that last piece, and then I'm going to pass the baton to Raquel to talk about the bill and how that intersects with this slide. So very grateful to many folks, our stakeholder community, staff at the department, and in particular the legislature for over the recent years building, I think, a very robust set of programs, the Water Resources Development Program, that is putting the state in a much better position to help communities deal with their long-term water supply needs. And this this slide here just gives a quick flavor of how those programs function. On the center left, the dark blue circle, that's our program, and it provides on the left-hand side as, through our staff resources, technical and information and planning assistance to communities and individuals who are who have questions and concerns about what their water supply and their water resources. But we also are administering funding. And on the right-hand side of the slide, you'll see that we have kind of three legs to the stool in terms of the funding program, primarily grants, but also loans are available. The types of programs involve planning, community-based planning. We're bringing folks to the table, representing a variety of interests within communities around the state to talk about what their needs are and to figure out how they can meet those needs in the long term. We also have been providing feasibility grants. These are technical analyses that help test the viability of project ideas. And last but certainly not least, our funds, grant and loans funds that are available for project level initiatives that different communities and interests are will propose and are proposing around the state. That suite of investments is going to put, I believe, our state and our communities in a much better place to be able to meet their needs, their broad needs, in stream and out of stream, over the course of the coming years. So I'd like to give you just a quick sense, thank you, Lori, of where we're at. Some of these programs are pretty new, and we're in the process of implementing them, some of them for the first time. The place-based planning grants, we have $750,000 available for that fund this biennium. We just closed our process for applications for that program. We received 15. We reviewed 15 applications from communities in the four corners of the state. They requested a total of $3.6 million. We have $750,000, so we're obviously not going to be able to support all those efforts, but we were really pleased to see the level of interest that came forward from communities, and I think it's sparking some longer-term interest in although we'll only be able to fund a handful of those requests, I think it is sparking a longer-term interest in having these kinds of discussions among communities. Feasibility grants, this was late-breaking news yesterday, so I wasn't able to add this to the slide, but we just had a recent round of applications close for the feasibility grants. There's $2.8 million for us available for these grants for this biennium. We had an earlier grant cycle. This is a program that we've had around for about 6 years or so, and we had an earlier cycle where we awarded about $500,000 worth of funds for feasibility grants. Historically, we've received maybe 10 to 15 grants in each cycle, applications in each cycle for this grant type. Our most recent cycle, though, received over 30 applications requesting, I think $2.3 million. And the types of analyses that they were looking for were associated with water reuse. They were associated with groundwater recharge and aquifer recharge. They were storage ideas as well as conservation efficiency types of projects. So we're really excited to see this level of interest. I think that it's showing a sign that the momentum is starting to build in terms of communities really developing interest and acting on those interests towards potential projects. And then I'll mention also with our project funds, we just closed the applications for the first round of funding under this new program that was created under Senate Bill 839 in 2013. We have $14 million available this biennium for that fund. We received 37 applications requesting a total of $51 million. There's a wide range of projects from all over the state, from a lot of different types of folks, individuals to small municipalities, wide range. We're really excited to see that level of interest. Obviously, we're not going to be able to support all those projects, but it does, I think, give a great really underscores the level of need out there among communities. So with that, I'm going to shift over to Raquel, and she's going to walk you through what's proposed in House Bill 4113. So thank you.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to present testimony today in support of House Bill 4113 and the -1 amendments. For the record, my name is Raquel Rancier. I'm the Senior Policy Coordinator with the Oregon Water Resources Department. So I'll turn to this slide, and if we focus on the bottom part of the slide momentarily, where Tom had just talked about the Water Resources Development Program, you'll note that that's really a program that's focused on longer-term solutions because it's going to take time to develop projects. It's going to take time to do place-based planning. And so that really, to me, is not a short-term immediate drought response, but it is part of a portfolio for us to be able to make communities adapt and more resilient to drought in the future. So this bill, House Bill 4113, looks at what the other two categories are, which is our immediate and intermediate tools to responding to drought. And that's because we have been putting forward a lot of effort into this longer-term program. And after the 2015 drought, we realized that we still do need to take a look and make sure that our short-term immediate response tools are effective. So that is what this task force and the reason behind it is to say, do we have the right tools in place when a drought is occurring to respond effectively? So House Bill 4113, we're fortunate enough to be able to bring a draft of the bill during legislative days, and I got a lot of great feedback from legislators on potential changes to the bill, and so I will go over that, and we were fortunate to be able to get that in the final bill draft that was introduced. We didn't actually have to do very many amendments, but I want to note that because there actually has been a lot of involvement and feedback that have been incorporated into this bill. So I'll go over two really key components, I think, of the bill for the purposes of time. First, I want to look at task force membership. That was a key issue that we wanted to discuss and that we heard a lot about. And then second, I wanted to go over what the task force might be able to do. So with the task force membership, first of all, we want to make sure that it has a diverse set of interests. So in the bill, it outlines for the governor to appoint 7 to 11 individuals representing conservation, tribes, counties, industrial water users, agriculture, irrigation districts, and municipal water providers. And I'll pause here to note that that's what that dash one amendment actually does, is it modifies the diverse interests that are should be represented in that bill. It strikes out, it says irrigation before agriculture, irrigated agriculture. And in working with one of our stakeholder groups, they asked that we broaden the term to just say agriculture. And so that's what the dash one amendment does. So moving into the geographic representation on the task force, we also, in conversations with legislators, heard that they wanted to make sure that we had Eastern Oregon, Central Oregon, and Western Oregon represented on this task force. And that, we think, really does make sense. One of the reasons for bringing this bill forward now is that in 2015, we did see that the whole state experienced drought conditions. So on the eastern side of the state, they were facing multi-year drought, and so their responses were a little different than on the western side of the state, where drought is pretty rare, and in some cases it was a new experience for some of those water users. So we want to make sure we do have that geographic representation so that we can take into account how well our drought response tools are meeting those different needs. Finally, we also, in speaking with some of the legislators, heard that they wanted to make sure that all of you, the legislature, could make appointments to the task force. So we have the 7 to 11 members that would be appointed by the governor, and the governor has those diverse set of interests as well as the geographic representation, but then also legislative leadership, the president, speaker, as well as the minority leader of both the Senate and House, would be able to appoint a member to the task force. And I respect all of your time, and so that's not a legislative member, that is a member of the public that would be participating on the task force. So with that, the task force would be reporting to the legislature November 1st. It would report to a committee such as yourself, which in the bill is listed as a Natural Resources Committee. We wanted to do this while the memory was still fresh of the 2015 drought conditions. And so that's the reason for moving quickly on this. And then also, in the event that we do have drought again, we want to be able to move quickly on getting new tools in place if that's needed. So with that, I'll turn to, here are some of the activities that for us we thought the drought task force might want to take a look at. And so I'll note that we did want to leave some flexibility there. So it does say may include but not limited to. So on this first slide here, this is really about drought response tools. Do we have the right tools in place? We have our existing emergency tools, which include, for example, emergency drought permits, or which allows a water user that's an existing water right holder to be able to access, for example, groundwater instead. We also have a tool, temporary transfer tool, during drought, which goes through an expedited process for approval and allows folks to temporarily change where they're using their water so that they can really get it to their highest value crops where they need it the most when there's limited water supplies. But these tools aren't used very frequently. Or I should say, these are the two tools that are used the most. But our other tools, which I don't think we need to get into, they're exchanges and substitutions and start to get pretty technical and in the weeds, but those tools aren't really used. And so for us, the question was, are our existing tools, why aren't they used? Are they needed? Are they effective? Let's have a conversation about that. In addition, another way of looking at it is we want to be able to identify options to be able to minimize the impacts of drought on agriculture and municipal interests, as well as fish and wildlife. And because drought is so far-reaching, we've added other interests in there that can be accommodated in the bill. And then finally, on this slide, you'll see we specifically called out tools for small water providers. I think this year we saw that those really small, under 5,000 water providers were the ones that were potentially most vulnerable or experienced the most challenges. And so this task force could also look at potential solutions for them. So finally, this slide focuses more on the information and data side of things. Since it has been a while since we've had such a statewide or broad impacts from drought, we wanted to take a look and see if we have the right data and information out there for the public and water users and our agency really to make decisions about drought and be able to anticipate the impacts and understand what those are. So we have in here both the data resources as well as improving information sharing. And that's because we saw both the need to potentially collect more data and coordinate on data, but also there was a lot, I think this year we saw one of the biggest impacts that the state could have was really through information sharing. So this is an opportunity to take a look and see how we did in 2015 and what we might want to consider for the future. So with that, that's all I intended to cover today on the bill. I think that for us it really is an opportunity to take advantage of the drought conditions that we saw last year and look at it from a statewide perspective and see if we have the right tools to be able to effectively respond to drought.
Questions?
You answered all mine.
Vice Chair Helm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not so much a question, but a comment and an attaboy, or atta girl, or atta people. I really like the direction that you're heading, and that last piece is, I think, really important to me. In that, I think that our information sharing in the water world is probably lagging. We may not even be into the 20th century there yet, and we need to be into the 21st. And so highly encourage you to develop that as much as possible and use the new tools that we have to promote that and make it easier for the water users to get the information they need and for the water managers to more easily do their job more efficiently. Better we do that, better we serve ourselves in conserving water and being able to use it where we want it, when we want it. So thanks and good work.
Any other questions?
No, I had about five and then she answered them.
Awesome. All right. Okay, great. Well, we've got a list of people that like to come up, so we'll see if somebody sticks around if we need any more feedback afterwards. So, Marianne Nash, Tom Wolf, and April Snell. All right, Marianne, we got you first on the list.
Great. Well, Chair Klim, members of the committee, Marianne Nash for the Oregon Farm Bureau. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify today. Farm Bureau is officially neutral on the bill. We think it is a wonderful idea to continue to evaluate and look at the long-term impacts of drought. It's an incredibly important issue. And as you are all aware, the impacts to agriculture were very strongly felt in the last year. A couple of things that we'd love to see long-term is some funding within ODA to actually look at and be able to monetize the impacts of drought year to year on agricultural communities. Right now, there's no ability to, they have no funding really to look at those numbers and to be able to evaluate impacts. So we can say they were strong. We can give individual examples of how it was felt within communities, but we don't have a good idea of aggregate on the state level what the impacts to Oregon's second largest industry looks like. One other thing that we think is really important, and I think the amendments do an excellent job of capturing, not the amendments, well, the actual bill and the one amendment in there is to look more broadly at impacts to agriculture. But we would like to see a more regional focus. We think that a lot of the impacts on drought are focused on rural communities. And so having a statewide look may not capture all of the particular regional considerations. And I think the regional focus of the bill goes a long ways toward doing that. But to me, it would actually be good to be having several separate regional conversations. And then the final comment on it is we'd like to see an increased emphasis on long-term solutions to drought. As you are all aware, the storage conversations have been moving forward, but we think that those long-term solutions are critical to ensuring drought resiliency and should be the focus of our efforts moving forward. So thank you.
Chair Clem, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tom Wolf, the Executive Director of the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited. I'm here representing my group, which is the largest cold water conservation group in the United States. And our members work many hours on restoration projects and protecting and enhancing the habitat of cold water fish, in particular salmon and trout. Recently this summer, we produced the State of the Trout. It's a 80-page document looking at the populations of the 28 species and subspecies of trout in the United States, of which 8 currently reside here in Oregon, many of which are in eastern Oregon, in particular Lahontan Cutthroat, Great Basin Red Bands, Columbia River Red Bands, Klamath Red Bands. There are many species that are in here that are impacted by the drought situation, and we applaud HB 4113. We believe that this is a necessary piece of legislation that will go a long way towards dealing with our area of emphasis, which is cold water species and the habitat. We also like the diversity of members in the task force. I'm a great believer that everybody should have a voice that has an interest in this topic. I believe that Eastern Oregon people, in particular, because the drought more affects them more than, i.e., the wet part of the state on this side of the Cascades. So we believe it's a great bill. It's a step in the right direction, and we ask for passage of it. Thank you.
April.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, for the record, April Snell with the Oregon Water Resources Congress. We represent irrigation districts and other agricultural water suppliers around the state. Collectively, our members deliver to one-third of all the irrigated land in the state, with the rest of the land being irrigated primarily by private landowners. And we are here in support of House Bill 4113. I think, as with many pieces of legislation, it could be tweaked in one way or another, but I think it is a really good step in the right direction. And given having a short session in front of you, I'm comfortable with the bill as drafted with the amendments. And I think that the drought that we faced this last year was incredibly destructive on the whole state. And while irrigated agriculture survived, it was just barely. And there will be long-term impacts from this drought. And I am very concerned about what's going to happen when we do get the next drought. And I think that is the key language there. It's not if, it's when. And as we're facing more extreme weather events, as the connections that have been earlier mentioned about flooding, wildfires, and different things, this task force would really help us be better positioned as a state to meet and deal with these extreme events. And it would also allow folks from around the state to have a conversation about not only how the drought has impacted them, but to come up with meaningful collaborative solutions that work for everyone. And I also agree with the comments made by Mary Ann that we need data, either funding OSU or ODA or both. We don't have a way to quantify what the drought impacts have been. Washington has recently invested to do just that, and unfortunately, Oregon doesn't have the resources to do that, and that's something we should be looking at. I do think it's important to have folks from both the west and the east side at this table, because the impacts that are felt on the east side need to also be understood, and help make the solutions that are needed are going to have to come from the urban areas as well. We're all water users, and that's something that I think is important to keep in mind. The drought impacts all of us, and so with that, I urge your passage of House Bill 4113, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Representative McClain. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mary Ann, what could the bill, what amendments could we add to the bill that would put more effectiveness to it, to starting to move from a conversation to actual real solutions in a way that Farm Bureau would like to see?
Chair Clem, Representative McClain, I guess my concern, and not even a concern, but what I got from my members when we were talking about it is they were saying, well, we want to have this conversation, but we're not quite sure. There's so many components to what this task force is supposed to look like. That they were a little unclear as to what the work product would be. And so my comments were kind of intended more toward saying, you know, let's continue to have the conversation legislatively and look at and be willing to tweak specifically what that group can look at. I think the original focus of it, and I think that there has been some changes to incorporate this, but the original focus is very much on short-term solutions. And I think that it's important that they have both the short-term, you know, are there tools that we need in a drought situation that we don't have now, but also long-term, how are we going to convene folks and actually get some projects going and get some results if we do have the drought resiliency that everybody agrees that we need. And so I would like to just, I guess, make it more clear that both short-term and long-term solutions are on the table, should be discussed, and that there might be, you know, as we've discussed, appropriateness for maybe an ask in 2017 around quantifying impacts of drought and making sure that we have funding to do that when drought situations arise.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just for the committee, you know, it there may be a disconnect, in my opinion, between what this legislature is prepared to do and what the need is. I'd put it this way: it is clear the legislature is concerned, but so far I don't see the legislature actually acting as if there is a crisis. And we have been for many sessions trying to get funding increased into water supply projects, and thankfully it's been inching its way, and we actually got some stuff done recently. But you know, who's against a task force, right, to sit and talk? I'm not.
Not either.
But I have great apprehension that some of my colleagues who don't see this as a crisis will check a box and say we're doing something about the drought. And so the danger of this task force is not the discussion. It is the perception that we're doing something. And we have a crisis. And so I'm going to support the bill. I get to appoint somebody. So I'm probably going to... Woohoo! I'm probably going to appoint someone who has a little bit of an edge to them and is going to poke and try to implement what Mary Ann from Farm Bureau has emphasized.
You can appoint yourself.
I can appoint myself. but we, but clearly, you know, my fellow members of the committee, this does not check the box. We have a crisis in water supply. And Washington is addressing it. We are not. And by the time, you know, and this thing isn't, you know, cut a check and problem solved. These things take years. This is turning a massive ship. I mean, it takes a long time to turn this thing. And so I just want to say that publicly, that the task force is going to have some engaging conversations. Applaud that. We got a crisis, and we have to start implementing real funded water supply projects all over the state.
Vice Chair Post, and I'll come to
I want to make comments. I want to I want to echo Representative McClain. I am probably one of the average citizens in Oregon who grew up in Oregon and assumed we would always have water. Holy cow, it's Oregon. And it wasn't until last year's session and some of the testimony we had here, and then I don't remember which legislative day we had some pretty eye-opening, maybe it was a lot of those graphics we just saw. And it's like the light bulb went off on me. Yeah, so I'm echoing what you said, and I'm greatly concerned that if we don't have water, everything else we do in this building is kind of worthless if you can't get a drink of water. And you can't feed the water the crops and feed the livestock and do the things that we need to do. So, yeah, I really want to urge every member in both chambers that this water situation is serious. I can't think of anything more serious in Oregon today since these folks here turned me on to the water problem. I just didn't realize it was there. And so this has really been an eye-opening experience for me. I mean, a life-changing in the last year. So I'm with you. This is great. Let's move forward. Let's do something. But let's not make it just another. I'm glad you said that. That was what I was thinking. Just another check mark on our box.
Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank our panel members for the very powerful statements that each one of them made here today. And I also want to underscore the comments made by Representative McClain that it is an emergency. And unfortunately, for vastly too many decades now, I've seen this cycle where we worry about forest fires during the summer, you know, because forest fires are so prevalent. And then when the rainy season comes, we forget about it. And now we worry about drought, and I see us beginning to forget about that. At least it doesn't have the public presence. It's not before us on an everyday basis. But an emergency, nonetheless, as Representative McClain mentions, and it's incumbent upon us as a legislature to do everything that we can to make sure that our efforts match the magnitude of that emergency. And I know here a little over 3 weeks ago, there were a number of legislators from across the nation, both ag and rural leaders, who met, and the issue met in Denver, and the issue of a drought was of the highest order of importance to those delegates from across the nation. And I think oftentimes we perceive this problem of drought as a Western problem. It is a national problem, and there were folks there from across the nation to drive that point. And Marianne, to the point that you made, this is going to necessitate regional solutions. There is no question about that. And on the map that showed very dramatically in colors, the rainbow of problems that exist here, they don't stop at Oregon's border. And in order for us to be able to deal with those problems, we have to have those regional solutions. But I think this is, Mr. Chairman, a critically important first step. We have to get our house in order here in Oregon. It has to become Oregon's emergency before we can join, I think, with our neighbors and be looking for adequate solutions on a regional basis. So thank you for your comments.
Rep. McClain.
And that Representative Witt brings up a good point. I see that two of my colleagues are sponsors. I did not mean any disrespect to House Bill 4113. I'm going to vote for it. I think this is a very good idea for discussion with diversity of regions and the like. I meant no disrespect in that regard. I hope you didn't hear that. I just...
He looks really mad.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think... I couldn't tell whether this guy is laughing or ready to beat me. He's steady Eddie.
Silently judging Tom right now.
But I just let, you know, I just think we need a sense of urgency, and I thought Marianne's comments were apropos. but certainly I'm glad we're doing this, and I want to thank the sponsors for it.
Let's get Gil and Angela, our last two up.
So I'm not edgy enough for you to appoint.
No.
You're Mr. Cool Cucumber.
Cool. Shall I go?
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Gil Riddell, Association of Oregon Counties. I'll be very brief. AOC fully supports House Bill 4113 and its amendment. And I especially want to thank Representatives McLean, Post, and Witt for their comments. They're absolutely true. And I wish the record were displayed in big neon line, a neon sign out in the hallway. But as for the bill, we're all in. So thank you.
Angela Crowley-Cook, Oregon Environmental Council. I'll be brief as well. OEC agrees that we are in a crisis right now, and we need to do something. So we support this bill. In particular, we support that the bill recognizes the importance of data and information sharing in anticipating future impacts with climate change, just adding additional pressure to drought in our water systems. We really appreciate this effort, especially since it's built on the integrated water resources strategy and expertise of local stakeholders. So thank you.
Any questions for these two? Okay. Seeing none, thank you. I will close the public hearing on, I may make a comment maybe before we do. I think that, one of the challenging things about water is it's pretty simple now, I think, for us to see that the risk to, the world, not just Oregon, but Oregon, because you had a drought. But it's certainly in my five sessions here, maybe not even counting the shorts, that's whatever, nine sessions here, I always wanted to avoid the topic if I could and avoid the committee if I could, because I knew it was complex to understand water law, and I knew people were often dug in pretty firmly in their own views on it. And so I tried to avoid it for the longest time and talk people like Jefferson into getting involved, or Bob Jensen, oh, let's let Bob handle it. But I do recall when I was first elected, the Statesman Journal editorial board had Representative Gilliam and I and Cameron and Senator Courtney and Winters and folks in for a pre-session discussion, and they asked, what do you guys think are the long-term biggest issues? And my answer that day was water, this is about 10 years ago, and debt, consumer debt on their credit cards and their mortgages, and the country's fiscal debt. And this was 07. Because I could see all these people borrowing money against houses that were worth a lot more than they supposedly were, and they had their credit cards maxed, and that one obviously came home to roost. But the water thing took a little longer. I thought it might be 50 years, not 10, before it got horrid, in a nearby state and required emergency measures and that kind of thing. But it is something that is challenging, certainly, because people do have widely held positions. They may have to get over on in some cases, and they may not want to. I don't want my irrigation water affected, certainly, in our orchard, but maybe I have to think about something, and maybe something's not as painful as I think, like putting in, we already did micro-emitting sprinklers, and, we piped our canals in a lot of the Hood River Valley to be able to make sure we're not losing to evaporation, and maybe ag has to do some of these things. But I do think that different people view solutions different ways, too. So one of my best friends in the world is the chair of this committee over in the Senate. His solution is generate a way to assess carbon and then fund all these water projects off the carbon fees. Well, not everybody's into that, it turns out. And yet, I think in the environmental movement, people acknowledge, certainly, that climate change is occurring. If we're brave enough, and I consider myself a conservationist, we probably have to move to mitigation, because it may be too late at this point. And water storage is a form of mitigation that is something that I think is absolutely critical. And whether it's low-tech water storage, like we talked about last month, or really expensive water storage, we do have to figure out a way to fund it. And the models may be more uncomfortable. I was talking with, I think, Farm Bureau in my office, and I told him a story when I was sitting out in a meeting talking about the Umatilla. We invested a bunch of money out there to try and figure out a way to inject water into the aquifer during the winter months. And one of the questions that I had had after we also figured out the port of Umatilla had a bunch of unused water rights that we could tap to get the farmers some more water now, because they were accounted for in the system, but they weren't actually flowing, was, would you all be willing to maybe pay the port of Umatilla for some of that water? No, no interest in that. And so all these solutions that find a way to get money for these things challenge long-held, deeply held views of what water should be for all of us. And I'm just not so sure we're all going to have to, aren't going to have to put aside some of our sacred cows to figure out how to do this. Because water storage is absolutely critical. But more creative ways to do it, you know, that we've talked about in this committee, couldn't get through the Senate, couldn't get through the building. We did get some funding, but I think it's a tenth of what Washington did, maybe, you know, and
or 5%.
5%. We used to have Senator David Nelson get laughed out of the building every time he talked about selling our water to California, but he was serious, like, let's figure out a way to get some money by selling some of it and getting it back. I don't know what all the options are that are good or bad, but they pretty much all have to be on the table, I think, because I do think it's an emergency. And this one aberration of an El Nino, you know, every 10 years isn't going to be there next year. El Nino is not a constantly recurring event. So all this rain and all this moisture on the coast probably is short-lived, it would be my guess. So anyway, that's my two cents. Anybody else who hasn't shared their views before we move on to...
That's about 25 cents.
Yeah, that's a lot more than 2 cents. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The only positive out of this horrific problem is I think it has calmed down our emergency clause whiners. And I would urge those who spoke on this panel to speak again on the floor. I would challenge you to find, sure, this is just a task force, find a more important issue for the short session.
Okay, so I'm going to close the public hearing then on House Bill 4113. I'm going to open a public hearing on 4012. And, so we've got a dash one amendment that I'm going to ask Rep. McClain to talk about. It's Representative Wilson's amendment, though I don't know if like this one's labeled yet, or do we have it? Is the labeling system all in place now?
I believe so, Mr. Chair. It's, it says requested by Representative Wilson, although I've heard they're not always accurate.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So at least if your last name's McClain.
Yeah.
Because I think Susan got one of mine and vice versa. Anyway, House Bill 4012, Representative Wilson asked me to urge the committee to adopt this amendment. This would allow some funding for the state to test the water and what is going to flow downstream after a dam removal. Recently, last year, Josephine County had a dam removed. And after the dam was being pulled down, private testing revealed a high level of pollutant that would be washing down to the adjacent county. In essence, a bunch of, at least the residents of Grants Pass, had information through private testing that said, we've got some bad stuff heading our way. So Representative Wilson represents Grants Pass and has urged that we would ask Ways and Means to include funding for testing prior to removal of a dam. Now, if it's a redundant request, meaning that if Director Beiler and Raquel and others plan to do this anyway, then just know it's a big thank you and affirmation. But we, it appears the governor and others are going to proceed forward in Klamath County with dam removal. I have supported the Klamath Basin Agreement once it included the Upper Basin, which is my district, and the debate has been dam removal. Congress failed to fund it, and to a large degree over the debate over dam removal. My understanding is the governor, with Richard Whitman's efforts on the point, are brokering a deal to remove the dams, and I must confess, I'm not an advocate necessarily for that. I'm an advocate for a cooperative agreement over the Klamath Basin. However, if the dams are going to be removed, we need to make sure, darn sure, that the sediment behind it and the amount of both water and elements that are going to be sent downstream are not going to impact negatively the health of people or animals. So that's a request of Representative Wilson. I think it's a reasonable request. I have no idea what the funding amount to do that would be. I can't imagine it's going to be significant, but what I deemed significant has changed since I entered the legislature. I used to think, you know, $10,000 public funding was significant, but I understand for a man like you, Mr. Chair, your level of significance has seven figures. So, that's right.
So, one challenge is, even if we wanted to do this amendment, I realize it's just a stuff, not a gut and stuff. And back to my earlier point, all the people who like the status quo or are uncomfortable with change aren't that into my dry day fund quite yet, it turns out. So we'd probably need to get another version of the amendment that kills all my stuff and just uses the vehicle. And then maybe we could get some kind of response on Representative McLean's question about current plans already around this topic area from the department to see if we need it. But any questions on the kind of what the amendment's about for now, at least? We can't do anything today. Well, we could, but it'd be a lot of freaked out people out there about the dry day fund, like looking them back there, just nodding and shaking and shivering. So we don't want to do that. Anything on Representative Wilson's amendment at the moment? Oh, see, Mary Ann's going to call somebody to try and get him in here right now to stop me. Representative Wynn?
Mr. Chairman, is there information out there that maybe we could receive, and it doesn't necessarily have to be public testimony, but maybe even just a brief report, if there is reason to assume that we've got problems behind dams that are being proposed for being removed, I think we owe it to the citizens of Oregon to know about that.
Yeah, I think we can probably figure out somebody in the Natural Resource Agency wheelhouse to help
well,
us with that.
Mr. Chair, Michelle is the LA for Representative Wilson.
Oh,
and
great.
I see her scribbling notes. Yeah. So I imagine she's going to print out that, would you?
Okay.
Thank you.
Great.
And Tom's still here, right? So.
Can I say something?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah, go ahead. Vice Chair Helm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that's a great idea. We have a few examples of dam removals in our region, Marmot Dam, Condit Dam. And there was extensive study done before and after. So there's two parts of that. Is there bad stuff behind the dams? And then to the extent that there is, how fast does it flush through and do conditions turn back to normal so that we understand the severity and the impact of whatever that stuff is? Because that's part of the equation too.
And my understanding, Mr. Chairman, is that flushing is fairly rapid, in fact, perhaps more rapid than folks initially thought. But again, there may be some items that we don't want flushed around, and quite frankly, if I were living downstream, you might take a different view on things. So
what if you're in drain?
Well,
everything goes
again,
to drain.
I think
I can't help it. I'm sorry. That's
no, no, but Mr. Chairman, in all sincerity, I think that this is all part and parcel of what it's going to take. We need to restructure the way we think about water. And I know you yourself said, you know, who would have ever thought that we would get to the point where in Oregon we are worried about water. But that water that's in the pipes, or that water is water at this point. And if we're going to get serious about dealing with a crisis that Representative McLean described, every bit of water becomes equally important. And how we deal with that, avoiding waste is of the highest importance. So,
well, Mr. Chair,
yeah.
One thing's for sure: if the testing or the flushing mechanism that Representative Helm and Representative referred to does suffice to disperse any bad elements, but as Representative Witt mentioned, there's a perception issue, and certainly in Josephine County, there's a perception issue that that the water supply, or at least you know the river downstream, was not good. We've had the EPA do one of the century's dumbest thing, and which wasn't in this state, thankfully. But we all know about that, right? They turned a river yellow,
yeah,
and the contaminants. So I think to assure the people, regardless of how it's, whether our Water Resources Department in the flushing mechanism, and if it comes back, hey, this is going to be adequate, we nevertheless need to address the perception issue, which may require actual testing to assure them that this, you know, there's nothing there. Because I'm not sure the flushing argument may persuade folks and alleviate apprehension.
No, it kind of reminds me of, you know, I don't know when, but 50, 60 years ago. It seems like cleaning up is better, first remediation is better than flushing, only because it flushes somewhere. And, you know, at one point, 50, 60 years ago, I think some people said, oh, throw it in the river, it's fine. It's a good way to get rid of stuff. Okay, now I have to learn what a gyre is, and there's massive swirling, floating plastic things. It's like, yeah, toss it in the river, that'll go somewhere. But yeah, it does go somewhere. A giant, floating, weird island of plastic way out in the middle of nowhere that my wife keeps showing me on these pages and teaching me, why don't you doing something about gyres? So, Representative Gilliam's chance to bring back his paper bag bill again here in the short session. We still got time to fit in one more issue, I think. still. And anyway, that's all I got.
You know,
okay.
I will say this. We all, plastics became the household topic, also brought up by my wife, with regard to Representative Gilliam's bill. And for 1 year after he introduced that bill, my wife would point out every plastic bag hooked on a barbed wire fence anywhere and point to it and say, see? So I think just to alleviate that tension in the car, I may be likely to support him if you don't introduce.
Okay, so let me close the public hearing on House Bill 4012. We will look at the response here, and then also getting a gun and stuff rather than just the stuff.
And are you guys okay to go on the Task Force one today?
Okay, let me open a work session on House Bill 4113 and take a motion if somebody's got one floating around.
Don't we need to accept the
yes, you're going to make a motion to adopt the Dash 1
okay.
Amendment dated
1/28/16. Okay, got it. Okay. Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated 1/28/16. To whom?
To the House Bill.
Oh, to House Bill 4113.
Vice Chair Post moves the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 4113 dated 1/28/16. Any discussion on this amendment? This is the taking the word irrigated out so it broadens to agriculture. Okay, any objections? Okay, seeing none, so adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4113 to the floor as amended with a do pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Post moves House Bill 4113 to the floor as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Okay. Any discussion?
Sorry. Yes, it is House Bill.
So we need a slight motion adjustment. This has got a subsequent referral, so it's to the floor.
Oh.
How's it worded in there?
To the floor and then with a subsequent referral.
To the Committee on Ways and Means.
Yes, I don't have it memorized yet.
I'm sorry. So you're just
Where's
gonna,
that?
To be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prayer.
Okay. So let's do that again. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4113 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Post has a slightly amended motion on the floor now, and that is to move the House Bill 4113 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Any discussion?
It's a lot of pressure.
Seeing that, will the clerk please call the roll?
Aye.
Representative
McLean. Aye.
Representative Wood.
Aye.
Vice Chair Helm.
Aye.
Vice Chair Post.
Aye.
Chair Puff.
Aye. Motion passes. Bill sent to Ways and Means. And then we'll get back to this other bill here, this other amendment on Monday. We don't meet Fridays, so don't come here Friday to this room anyway, unless you have another committee meeting. Anything else for the good of the order?
Can we entertain a motion to begin at 8:30?
Yeah. We will start when we only have this, like, a bill or two. We will not start at 8 again. Sorry about that.
Well, we started at 8?
Yeah.
Oh, not 8:30?
Well, some of us started at 8, Mr. Chair.
do we take that case by case, or do we just say 8:30 from here on out?
I think we're okay for 8:30 from here on out. Yeah, there's not heavy agendas.
Does that really mean 8:45?
and Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Along those lines, do you know what room we'll be meeting in next time?
Here.
Thank you.
And anything else for the harassment of Beth or I? Okay, seeing none, we'll adjourn the committee. Okay, seeing none, we'll adjourn the committee.